This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. This week, Anna Kiko Myers is really adamant about asking composers to write new music for the violin. So much so, she says if Rachmaninoff, Ravel, and Chopin were alive, she would be harassing them as well. Well, most recently, the composer she approached was very happy to write a new work for her, and it turned out to be the last work that he composed before his death. We'll hear more about that, and you'll also find out what Anna Kiko Myers is learning from her two young daughters. Enjoy. So, Anne, every time you and I talk, it seems that another dream of yours has become reality. How many of your dreams do you think have actually come true?
That's really true. I'm Cinderella. What can I say? This was another dream of mine to release my latest recording, which happens to be my 35th recording, and I was always a lifelong fan of Finnish composer Aino Juhani Rautavaara. And I listened to his music originally back in my 20s and fell in love, deeply in love, with the Concerto for Birds and Orchestra. And this piece moved me so much. And how he could incorporate a bird preserve and chirping and singing of birds into music was so fascinating to me. And in 2015, I was wondering what the then 85-year-old Rautavaara was up to and asked if he would be interested in writing a shorter 15-minute work for violin and orchestra. And he immediately responded with, yes, I would love to, and pretty much sent me the score right after.
So you were able to go to Helsinki and perform the work for him. Tell me about that experience.
So after I received the score and I ran to my music studio, I was just so breathlessly excited to find out what this piece was going to be about. And I was so stunned that it had a lot of similarities to the work that I originally fell in love with, the Concerto for Birds and Orchestra. And there's just such a scope and a depth of feeling throughout the piece that is so, so transcendently beautiful. And I was so excited to perform the piece for him, and he invited me to his apartment overlooking the harbor there in Helsinki. And I, you know, was like a groupie just taking photos of his door that said Rautavaara on it because I was so excited that I was there. But I played the piece for him, and immediately he turned to me and he said, I really truly did write such a beautiful piece, and I could not agree more. It was incredible also that he did not make any edits or revisions of any kind. The only change that I made was of the bowings, and I fearfully, you know, asked him if he was okay with that, because that really changes the phrasing and the breath of a phrase. And he said, you know, I've always struggled with violin bowings, and I appreciate you taking the time to change them to make them more comfortable. I could have just kissed him on his cheek to say that.
Oh, I know there's a charming photo of the two of you inside your new recording. It looks like it was a very intimate experience getting to share, you know, bring his music to life with him there. So the premiere of this piece, however, happened after he passed away, this being one of the last works that he composed.
I premiered it with Michael Stern and the Kansas City Symphony. And, you know, even just getting to hear the piece in the studio when I recorded it with the Philharmonia Orchestra, that was back in May, and he passed away, sadly, in July. You know, unfortunately, we were never able to give him any kind of copy of that recording. But to finally hear the brass and this undulating kind of waves of sound. And this really feeling of nature and trees moving. And big masses of water slowly rolling. Just was breathtaking to me.
Now, I know that he had handwritten the score, and I would imagine, I don't know if you have this score. Do you have it?
I do. He basically faxed over the original copy, and it was a little hard to decipher, but I was just like, wow, this is very old school. You know, I mean, most composers send their scores, everything is just typed out on a note paper, like clearly, but this was all handwritten and phenomenal. I mean, that there were not even one note of any instrument in the orchestra needed to be changed, as well as my part.
Now, I know that this piece has touched you on many levels. Can you talk a little bit about what you feel when you perform it?
Listening to this music now really does feel like an elegy of sorts. And I'm not sure if he was aware of his own mortality. And he was very in fragile shape. He was using a walker, but he was just such a gentle soul that he had, and smiling often, and, you know, telling me about his time with Sibelius. I mean, it's just incredible to think that this person actually knew Jean Sibelius, and Sibelius loved the fact that he had a car and just running errands for Mr. Sibelius. And then we would talk about our time, his time at Juilliard, and what that was like to live in New York City back, I think it was in the 50s that he was there. And it was just such a wonderful, experience to be around this living historical figure, you know, that I admired so much.
I know that you are not shy about approaching composers and asking them to collaborate. Why is it so important to you to work with living composers?
You know, if you don't ask, you'll never know. That's my motto. So people can always say no. And that almost spurs me to harass them more. There are some composers who might run the other way when they see me, actually. Because I am just so adamant in trying to get more music and repertoire for the violin from them. And, you know, all music was new at one time. When I think of music from Rachmaninoff, just last night I heard the Rachmaninoff cello sonata, and I was just lamenting that, God, if he were around, how I would have bugged him to the ends of the earth to write more for the violin. I mean, there's no Rachmaninoff violin concerto, no Rachmaninoff sonata, or Chopin, or even Ravel. You know, I mean, what would it have been like if these great composers wrote more music? It's just always a question in my mind that I'm thinking about.
Well, you brought up Ravel, and he is also, his music is featured on your new recording, Fantasia, as well. You chose a piece that was written for a specific violinist. In fact, each of the pieces on this recording had a particular violinist in mind. Tell me about this work, Tzigane.
The Tzigane is awesome. It's just a tour de force, and he was so enamored with Hungarian themes and this gypsy kind of playing. And he was at a party and heard Jelly Duranghi performing all night long, and told her, you know, I am so inspired by this kind of music that I would love to write the Tzigane for you. The opening is this almost 4-minute cadenza before the orchestra comes in like a tidal wave. And it is the story of a gypsy who is expressing all the hardships that they've gone through and the love that they've lost and all this outpouring of emotion. And it's just so much fun to attack and to play and sing through. And then with the orchestra, the orchestration is so coloristic. And every time I perform it, I just can't believe that it's only 10 minutes long, and it covers like the gamut of the color spectrum. And it just ends with this Tom and Jerry romp, really. You know, it's like, who's going to get to the green light and to the finish line first?
It's a great way to wrap up the recording. In between the Radovara and the Ravel is the Szymanowski Violin Concerto No. 1. Now, there are some connections, I suppose, that I could bring to light, but why did you choose to include this violin concerto within the context of this recording and these other works?
The theme for this album, really, to me, was to showcase incredible composers that used color in such a magnificent way. And the Szymanowski is, it is the one of the most haunting, lyrical, expressive, exotic, erotic pieces that I just cherish performing. And I think that Szymanowski's music is also very underrated, unfortunately. I don't understand why. And I felt like, you know, it's my duty to show and share with audiences like just how spectacular this music is. He was also greatly influenced and motivated by his relationship with the great Polish violinist Paul Kochanski. And Kochanski had a hand also in Prokofiev's first violin concerto. And you can hear similarities. And, you know, the cadenza towards the end of the concerto, which is, I mean, already the concerto is technically incredibly challenging. But he, Kochansky, wrote the cadenza, and it's amazing. It's one of whimsy as well. I mean, every time I perform it, I feel as if I'm kind of taking the story of a nymph. Walking through the forest and, you know, all the things that she's seeing and feeling. And then it just ends with her flying off, you know, into the sky.
So what is one of your fondest memories of making this recording?
Being able to hear the Rautavaara for the first time in the studio was an experience I'll never forget. And it's really like giving birth to a child. You just really don't know until all the voices have come together what the identity of this child is going to be like, what the personality of this child is going to be like. And to finally hear all the magnificent brass and winds and violins lushly playing, and it's like, wow, this really is a treasure that he left violinists and the world.
Well, since you brought up the whole idea of child, I know you have two little girls, and I'm just curious, are you playing any duets or trios in your household at this point?
My girls are 5 and 7, and you know, they love playing violin. They also play a little piano. So they're teaching me a lot about things. It's amazing to watch them play, and it's super sweet.
So what have they taught you? What have you learned from them so far?
You know, it just brings back so many memories of when I was a little girl playing and, you know, not wanting to practice and wanting to be in the sandbox or whatever. And, you know, there's a lot of that, too, with them. It's difficult to find 5 minutes in the day with so much school activities. But then when you actually are playing and practicing and doing it, it just brings such a feeling of peace. So it's fascinating to watch them feel that as well.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. Next week, we'll hear from an ensemble that's known for their grace, grit, and clarity. They're the Danish String Quartet. Their newest recording is called Last Leaf, and it's filled with timeless Nordic folk music. I'm Julie Amacher.